Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und welcome to Gegenpressing. Or should I say, grüß Gott aus München, Gegenpressing. I'm your host Manuel Feit and I am in Munich. And I'm as always joined by Stefan Bienkowski. Stefan, how's it going?
Yes, I'm doing very well, even though I'm not in Munich, which is always a disappointment for me.
It's sad you're not here. One of these days, we need to do one of these Bundesliga trips together. Very lucky this weekend, Stefan, that the DFL organized a trip to see the Revier Derby and then Union Berlin, which was a ton of fun. But obviously, I missed you. You were not on it. So, yeah. It's half the fun gone.
I'm sure we can arrange a Gegenpressing weekend away at some point.
This needs to happen. We used to do Chris Williams, of course, who everyone who listens to the show knows, and I used to do these quite regularly. And it's time. I think in the spring, Stefan, we need to do a Gegenpressing trip through Germany.
Yeah, it's just so busy right now because we were talking about this before we came on the podcast about Champions League games and trying to get to those, and so condensed at the moment. But hopefully after the World Cup maybe gets out of the way, we can start getting into the more spirit of it all and getting out to games, and Chris can be there. And there's also a lot of other Bundesliga writers that, you know, we'd love to have on the show as well. So probably try and get them on as well, because it's always good to get a fresh perspective.
Absolutely, 100%. I mean, this is just manic from here till November. We're getting a little bit of a breather. Before we dive into the main show, just want to mention this one more time. This is the regular show. You're getting a show behind the paywall if you are a subscriber. If you're not, well, you should get on that. And we're not doing a prediction show this week because there's no match day, because there's an international break. Stefan, you will be going on your much-deserved honeymoon, finally.
And yes, I will.
I am spending a week in Vienna where I may take in the Canada International that is in Bratislava against Uruguay. But that's not to do with this podcast. So, yeah.
We should also maybe just say, like, if you are considering taking out a subscription, it's worth bearing in mind that this week's bonus podcast is going to be a mailbag podcast. So we have asked, you know, subscribers to send us their questions, and we've already got 13 before we record tomorrow morning. So it's going to be a big one.
Wow, I haven't seen all of them yet, so I need to probably study a little bit.
It's going to be a big show.
It's going to be a very big show. So yeah, take out a subscription. It helps with everything we do, including going on trips, producing content and all that sort of stuff. So it really helps. So we have a ton to discuss this week. We should probably get started right after this break.
This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. use our promo code BELIEVE50, BELIEVE50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts.
So, I'm pretty sure we're going to get a ton of questions about this, Stefan. A ton. Absolutely a million questions at least. Here's my prediction on that. But I cracked up yesterday at dinner. It's Oktoberfest in Munich for the first time in 3 years. It's for anyone who is from Munich. And I'm not going to lie. It's one of the main reasons I did the trip at this time of the year, because it's Oktoberfest. But the picture that Bill put up yesterday, the Griesenwiesentisch, oh, nur eine lächelt, only one is smiling, and that was Nagelsmann's wife, who happens to work for the very outlet that printed that picture. Not wife, I should say girlfriend.
I was going to say, if I missed something.
They're not married yet, but like, she was the only one smiling, and she used to work for Bild. Bild is enjoying this moment, I'm sure. I mean, there was a famous thing that I once said on a show when we first started, and that was right around the time with Carlo Ancelotti, and I said when Carlo Ancelotti and Thomas Müller fell out, I said the Christmas tree will be on fire in Munich. It's safe to say the Christmas tree is on fire in Munich. It's September, and the Christmas tree is truly burnt down. Wow. 4 games in a row without a win.
Yep. It's quite something. That Augsburg game was just absolutely nuts. I had one eye on it when I was watching the Dortmund match. And, you know, it's just kind of more of the same that we are getting from Bayern.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. You know, we've already kind of talked about a lot on the podcast before in terms of, you know, the way that Bayern have kind of changed their kind of tactics this season, and how, in my opinion, the club has undoubtedly pivoted to a very strong emphasis on the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both of those things are kind of playing a part here. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago about how I felt like the team that Nagelsmann had put together for this season was a quite untraditional Bayern team, in the sense that not only did it not have a number nine, but it was also kind of designed to take on better teams in the Champions League, because, you know, they can counterattack very quickly. They've got more players to kind of break with speed, and they can obviously press teams a lot more because they don't have like a number nine who, let's be honest, Lewandowski wasn't always the biggest presser. So it kind of felt like they've gone through an evolution in that regard. But, and to be fair, we saw them do a good job of that against Inter Milan. Now, the downside to that is, and we talked about it at the time, that it also means that they don't have that proven method of basically just hammering teams, pushing them back into their own box, and then just providing enough service, and eventually, you know, Robert Lewandowski will get on the end of it. And Thomas Müller kind of said this after the match on Saturday, that he's already noticing a few times this season when he swings a ball into the back post or a quick through ball to the back post, and that's obviously where he spent so many years expecting Lewandowski to tap it in, and there's nobody there. And, you know, you contrast that with the images of Sadio Mane literally running into him when they were both going to take a shot against Barcelona in midweek. And, you know, it couldn't be a stronger contrast in fortunes. And I think this actually does kind of stack up statistically as well, because when you look at the kind of expected goals that Bayern's forward players are putting together and the goals that they're scoring, it's still very early days. You know, we're only, 7 games into the season. So, you know, these kind of statistics haven't really gone through the ringer in terms of, you know, being a fair proper average over the course of a long enough period of time. But there's already some notable ones. For example, Sadio Mane's got 3 goals, but his expected goals are 4.5. Thomas Müller has only got one goal, but his expected goals are 3.36. You also have Leroy Sané on two goals, but his expected goals are 3.01. You know, these aren't huge numbers, but they are kind of indicative of the fact that I've had a lot of Bayern fans in my mentions, at least two or three this weekend, saying, you know, why is it that goalkeepers keep turning up against us? And the question, you can kind of flip that to one side and say, yeah, well, maybe all these goalkeepers are suddenly decided. Maybe they all met up pre-season and said, right, guys, let's really make sure we put an effort in against Bayern Munich. Or you're seeing a case of Bayern Munich having three or four forward players who just aren't very clinical in front of goal. And I still go back to that Gladbach game when I got a huge amount of stick on Twitter and even from some of our listeners and subscribers who got in touch after the match because I said, or after the podcast, because I said, even though Bayern racked up a huge XG over the course of 90 minutes, there wasn't a huge amount of excellent finishing in that game. And, you know, we argued with people on Twitter about this. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
I back you up on that 100% because I remember seeing that video with the 19 chances that Bayern had. And I was like, okay, like 16 or 17 of those were right on Sommer. That's hard. That's harsh. That's a high number. But you know what I mean, right? Like there was maybe two in there was like, wow, that's a good save. But the rest, I'm like, as a former goalkeeper, I'm like, thankful. Oh, that's a nice one. Okay, I'm going to make look this good. Thankful. Wow, that's hard. And then, like, you know, it continues that way, like, which kind of backs up what you're saying, right? Like, they're getting into the right positions, but the finishing hasn't been great.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just kind of the downside, I guess, to what they decided to do this summer. They had arguably the best finisher in European football up front, and they swapped him for Sadio Mane, who has always been a good player for Liverpool, but he hasn't ever been the most clinical player for Liverpool. And if Chris Williams is on the podcast right now, he'd probably quite happily say that Mane routinely goes through long periods of not scoring goals for Liverpool, and he is still valued, or at least he was still valued in that Liverpool team because of the hard work he put in, the way that he played well with Mohamed Salah, the way he set up goals. But the concern here is that that's not enough for Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich aren't the kind of team, or aren't the kind of fan base or club that excuse a striker for not scoring goals if he's putting in the hard work off the ball. It's just not good enough.
No, it's not, which is why they're going to sign a striker next summer. I've been bugging you about this on WhatsApp, so you know what's coming next.
I do, of course, yeah.
I had to sit down with, you know, everyone has the golden source that they trust because they came through that with them with every time with very good information. And this person just looked at me when I had lunch with them in Dortmund, and he's like, when Salihamidžić says that he's going after a certain player, or it gets leaked that he's going after a certain player, he will do everything he can to go after a certain player. He did it with Sadio Mane, and he's now going to do with Harry Kane next. If there is a chance, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, because obviously Harry Kane might do the same with Bayern than he did with Man City, right? And simply snub them because he doesn't want to go anywhere else. But everything that you read about Bayern having contact with his agent, I think his brother, right? That's true. That's happening. There is talks with, you know, him and the club that, you know, of the possibilities of making this happen. And Salihamidžić just being very adamant of trying to get something like that done. Of course, it's early days, and that's not going to help Bayern Munich at all until next summer. But I think my indications of everything that I'm hearing from people that I really trust is that if the door opens and Harry Kane is ready and willing to go somewhere else and try it out, Bayern Munich will be there and they will get it done.
Yeah, it's really interesting, this one, because, you know, on paper, you can understand why Harry Kane would be interested to move to Bayern Munich. You know, the Man City move's been blocked off because they got Erling Haaland. Can't see him going to Chelsea. Man United is too tricky. Arsenal's too tricky. He's not. Can't imagine Newcastle would be too appealing to him. He wants a club that will undoubtedly be challenging for titles, because this would be like his last roll of the dice for his career as a top class player, because he'd be looking at that Champions League, he'd be looking at league titles that he wants to win. Real Madrid are maybe one option, because obviously they're still looking for a long-term replacement to Benzema, so there's maybe, it'd be interesting to see if they kind of roll into this kind of transfer saga to see if they get step in, but only because they're in the exact same position as Bayern Munich, where they're one of the few super clubs who challenge for the Champions League regularly that have a big hole in the number nine position. And so on that side, it does make plenty of sense, but I'm also worried from a Bayern Munich point of view that this kind of goes the way of the Erling Haaland rumours last year, where, you know, there was some excellent reporting from within Germany saying Bayern Munich are undoubtedly interested in Erling Haaland. They've reached out to him. They've reached out to his people. You know, he's had a medical in Munich, blah, 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 blah. But that doesn't obviously mean that they'll be able to get a deal over the line. And in the meantime, all it does is piss off the players who are already at the club, because while Harry Kane at this moment in time seems like a smart addition to this Bayern team, if that rumour just rumbles on until next summer, all it's going to do is piss off Sadio Mane. It's all only going to do is piss off Serge Gnabry, even Leroy Sané, who may consider himself a striker in that team. And, you know, it's not going to be doing that team any favours, even if it is something that maybe in the long term they could use. And then even on top of that, sorry, just to continue, like, I still feel like it kind of completely contradicts what Bayern were trying to do this summer. They obviously went in a clear direction to go with a striker-less formation. And, you know, if Nagelsmann and Salihamidžić sat down and said, right, this is the way we want to play our game, we want to play without a traditional striker because it's the modern way of playing the game, it's how we can get teams like Man City or Liverpool in the last stage of the Champions League. If at this point of the season, then we're only a few months in, Salihamidžić has already said, all right, that didn't work. I'm going to spend the next 8 months on the phone to Tottenham trying to sign their striker. It's a huge issue for Nagelsmann, because it's basically saying to him, I don't trust that your formation is going to work in the long run.
Yeah. A couple of things on that, and I think we need to talk about Nagelsmann in a moment anyways, but
a little bit. The easy solution is just get rid of the head coach as well.
No, I mean, like, I'm not going there quite yet, but Nagelsmann did make comments that he would like Harry Kane during the Bayern US tour, and Antonio Conte rightfully was not very happy about that. Remember that? So I do think that this is maybe something. It might actually be one of the few things the bosses and Nagelsmann agree on right now. I think Nagelsmann has this put on this facade of, oh, it's actually so great that we don't have strikers because now I can test out all the stuff. But he said that when things were going well. He hasn't said something like that since. And, you know, because things aren't going well. They're going well in the Champions League. I thought the Robin Gosens comments today that Inter Milan felt like when they were playing against Bayern, it felt like it was a different level entirely. And I just wonder if this team is actually perfect for the Champions League, but in the Bundesliga, it just doesn't work, because Bundesliga teams, after us complaining about it for a full season, are finally switching their tactics against Bayern. They're playing with like a compact 3-5 in midfield, right? They're really limiting the players in their attacking options, and they're really hurting Bayern. And there's also a little bit of a lack of respect, maybe, because there isn't a number nine that they have to watch all the time. So I think that the game in the Bundesliga is just changing a little bit, and it's not changing in Bayern's favor. But I also think that there is an internal struggle here, and this is my transition to Nagelsmann, in terms of, you have a 35-year-old head coach, right? I assume, I'm not 100% sure, but he would be the youngest man on the show if he was on, right?
Between us?
Yeah.
No, I'm still slightly younger.
Slightly younger. Okay. So he's definitely younger than me. And What I was going to say is that throughout his entire career, he's never really had this cold wind blow in his face. And now it's happening at the biggest club, one of the biggest clubs in the world, that happened to have spent 25 million euros to sign him from Leipzig, which is a mind-boggling sum. I mean, that's more than what Chelsea paid for Graham Potter, right? Yeah. And Premier League teams pay a lot of high fees for coaches, much more though, although the Bundesliga is quite high up there as well. So I shouldn't say that. We actually have a list on Transfermarkt, right, where we list them. And I think there's quite a lot of Bundesliga coaches on there. But it's a lot of money. But that might give him a little bit of leeway. But I have a sense that for the first time in his life, he has to change the way he is, because he's working in a club where, despite him having such a large ego and character, there's other people that have an even larger ego and character. And if a picture could say 1,000 words, I felt like that picture taken at the Oktoberfest. That's it. Like, that's it. You know, you have Oliver Kahn purposefully not smiling. Like, he's hiding a smile. Let's be honest here. We all can see it. It's a line in his face. You know, there's that smiley with just a line. That's Oliver Kahn. Even Salihamidzic, he's always has like a tiny smile on his face. Even he's trying to hide it. Nagelsmann is like half in shadow in that picture. His girlfriend, not his wife, his girlfriend is laughing because she works for Bild. She probably thinks it's all great. But it's the first time in his life he's being confronted with the situation. In fact, it's like the first time in his career too that he has to go to Oktoberfest as a Bayern coach. And that is so much media attention, right? And in the first year or so, he didn't have that because of COVID. And now it's all coming at him. It's all coming at him at the highest speed possible, with all the media attention, with the Oktoberfest visit. Things are not going well. It's the longest non-winning streak since, what, 2001, 2002, right? It's the worst start since 2011-12, I think. This is a first full-blown crisis for him. And I think the other aspect, and I'm almost done, is that all of a sudden there's Thomas Tuchel available as well. So there's so much unraveling right now at the moment. It's like a perfect storm. And I think that's extremely difficult for him.
Yeah, you know, you basically took the words right out from my mouth there when you mentioned Thomas Tuchel. And I think that just sums up the different kind of situation he's in now. You know, obviously at Hoffenheim and RB Leipzig, he could basically walk around being the cock of the walk, you know, in the sense that he could do what he wanted, he could experiment. And at the end of the day, these clubs, although they mumbled and grumbled if the form did take a nosedive, they were never going to sack him. But at Bayern Munich, there's always another head coach that can step in. And in Thomas Tuchel, you know, you not only have an excellent head coach there, but you have one who has specifically proven himself to be great at winning the Champions League from what he did at Chelsea. And if Bayern Munich are fixated on winning another European Cup long before they, you know, go for their 20th Bundesliga title, Thomas Tuchel is a very appealing option there. And like you said, I completely agree with you in that regard, in terms of, you know, how that completely changes the dynamic of the power, the hold that Nagelsmann usually has on these clubs. But I guess the only thing that really comes down to is whether Tuchel would be interested in that Bayern Munich job, which would be very interesting. I saw the links to him this in the weekend, and I really wasn't sure whether to say, you know, whether I thought it was a crazy idea or maybe a perfect idea, because, you know, I think we talked about this in a recent show about Tuchel, in the sense that, or maybe in fact I was talking to someone on Twitter about it. I was saying that, you know, he has this reputation for being a kind of problematic and troublesome head coach. But if you actually flip the perspective on his career, he's actually been in charge of three of the most volatile clubs at the top of European football. Dortmund have been a basket case since Jurgen Klopp left. I'm sorry, but that's an oversimplification, but I think it's a fair one. PSG, a bit of a circus themselves, obviously. And then, of course, Chelsea, who are famous for chopping head coaches as soon as they hit a stumble in the road. So I did think, I then suggested, well, you know, until he finds a club that are quite happy to just kind of sit back and let him work in the long term, we'll never really know what kind of head coach he could be. And maybe that's something that a club like Bayern Munich can offer. But at the same time, maybe he is that volatile head coach. Maybe he is that head coach that cannot help but come to blows with, you know, sporting directors and presidents. And after 18 months, those reputations are just red raw and they fall apart. And if that's the case, then him arriving at Bayern Munich would be like, you know, a lit fuse to a lit match to a fuse or into a powder keg, and it would just blow up in their face. So it would be to borrow an expression from the popular Netflix docuseries, is it would be all or nothing. I think if Bayern Munich were to hire Thomas Tuchel,
I love that. I think it would be like walking. It would be the same as it is now, because Tuchel and Nagelsmann are of a generation of coaches where the pendulum of power swung towards them, right, within club hierarchies, or perceivedly swung towards them, or they feel like it should have swung with them. It's like the Pep Guardiola generation, right? And in fairness, Tuchel worked quite well with Roman Abramovich, and I mean, he holds the record of being the only coach at Chelsea to survive Roman Abramovich, just to be sacked by a crazy American right after. But it's what I'm trying to say is that these guys all had these perception of now the coaches are going to have more power within clubs, and it seemed almost like they were going to get that, but it seems to be swinging back towards the clubs having the power. And you see that, I think, right now. That's one of the things that Bayern Munich did. They're very much saying, they're setting borders for Nagelsmann that he previously did not know. And I suspect that if Tuchel would come in, it would be very much the same. And one of the reasons why Tuchel did fail at Dortmund is because he was trying to expand his powers and expand the boundaries in which he could work in. And the club said no. And then, of course, he went abroad where he did have more powers, only to find out eventually that, you know, the same is happening there now. Todd Boehly at Chelsea is very much trying to limit the powers, right? He's bringing in a traditional sporting director now. Whether that's going to be Christoph Freund or not remains to be seen. But the case still stands that that's what's happening. And, you know, at Bayern Munich, they had always had that infrastructure. So if Tuchel would come in, he would deal with the exact same things that Nagelsmann would deal while being a very similar character.
So, yeah, no, 100%. I completely agree. So it'd be really interesting to see what happens. But I think for the time being, I think, considering how much they spent on Nagelsmann, how much they invested in him and the squad, I think they're likely to stick around until performances in the Champions League fall apart. If you know, if this group stage campaign suddenly takes a nosedive, or if it's a similar situation to last season when they get knocked out in the last 16, then I think Nagelsmann's in deep trouble. But until then, I don't really think anyone at Bayern Munich's freaking out at them being, what, how far behind are they? They're only, what, 5 points behind Union Berlin. I don't think that's not grounds to sack him. I don't think
it's 3 points behind Dortmund, which is the only thing that matters. Exactly. We will talk about Union Berlin and how amazing they are. Don't worry, and maybe they can go on a fairy tale run. I don't want to say no, but for them right now, that's not how I see it. It's how Bayern see it. The gap to Dortmund is what matters, and that's 3 points, and that's in their eyes is something that they can, they can bridge that gap, they feel. And we should probably talk about Dortmund, because I did hear something crazy as well, that if things do go bad with Edin Terzic, here's what someone I know thinks, this person I also trust quite a lot, is that things do go bad with Terzic, he would probably just not get sacked, but just step back into a technical role again. Just accept that it doesn't work. And Dortmund could, under new sporting director leadership, actually patch up things with Tuchel and try to bring him back.
Wow. I mean,
no, that's all theoretics, right?
It's crazy. I mean, I think bringing Tuchel back would be incredible. I think it'd be an outstanding move from Dortmund. But like you said, I think it would take a lot of people to accept that they were wrong a few years ago.
Yeah.
Which I'm not quite sure the club are there yet, just yet. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
It's also a tough rumor to put out after Dortmund have won the most emotional game that exists for them. In probably the most emotional fashion. And I was at the Revier Derby, Stefan. If you have not seen it live, it puts a completely different perspective on it. I was glad my Signale Iduna reflexes are still around. Like, having worked games there in the past, I know that whenever Dortmund score, you have to quickly lean over your laptop while your back takes up all the beer. All the other international colleagues that were with me at the game for the first time, maybe there were some laptops broken, let's say it that way. but what I was trying to say is that this time, Erdin Tezic did come to the right conclusions, and he did bring on the win from the bench. And I did speak to Youssoufa Moukoko after the game. He was actually made available to the media, which is very seldom, and he has a minder with him because you have to remember, he's only 17. But I actually thought the way he played when he came on and the difference he's made, and he's one of three players I want to point out. I think you know what the other two is, but the way he played and the difference he's made, is it maybe just time to play Moukoko until Haller comes back?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because he did get a run of games to start the season, and I wasn't crazy about his performances just because, you know, I felt like physically he wasn't really ready to be a traditional number nine, to hold the ball up, to allow players to play off him, et cetera, et cetera. And obviously at the time when, you know, I think this is possibly before Modeste had signed, but it's just before we knew he was coming. I thought, you know, Modeste kind of fits that role far better because he's obviously done it very well at Cologne. He's got the physicality for it. He's played as a target man for a number of years. But since then, I've just been so incredibly disappointed in Modeste. He was, again, anonymous in that match. I think I tweeted at halftime that Wolf, as a makeshift left back, had more touches of the ball in the Schalke box than Modeste had. He had a decent header at the corner just before half time, but I mean, in terms of open play, he was completely anonymous. And this isn't the first time; it's happened countless times. It happened in the Man City game as well, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And at times, he's almost an infringement on that Dortmund attack because he's not off right. He can't do anything on the ball, can't link up with players, and I guess when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense because the way that Dortmund front line works is they have to be very quick, they have to be very dynamic. It kind of drives me mad, but when they work well, it's when you have Marco Reus, it's when you have Jude Bellingham, it's when you have Julian Brandt kind of back-heeling it and dummying it and flicking balls to each other. And I mean, I think one of the biggest issues for Dortmund is that these players, Brandt and, dare I say it, Marco Reus in particular, are far too flowery, shall I say, in the final third, which is the way a former boss I used to have used to describe when he wanted an article that was, you know, a little less serious and far more kind of imaginative. He'd say, "Give me something a little more flowery," he would say. So I don't know why that's came to mind. That's just a typical Glasgow thing, I guess. That's how I describe kind of Royce and Brandt at times, in the sense that they don't pay enough attention to the idea of holding onto the ball. But anyway, in terms of that, they need a kind of quick, pacey forward to play off, or at least play in. And when Moukoko came on in that game, you could see how much difference he made in terms of the runs he was making, in terms of just running towards goal. I don't know if it maybe because it coincided with Schalke being a bit more adventurous after the 60th minute, because they did so well to defend in the first half that you could see that they were coming out in the second half and saying, do you know what, if we string a few passes together here, we might be able to steal this game. Maybe that coincided with Moukoko being able to get more space in behind. So But I think it did show that at times he can work very well in that front line as a more kind of classic number nine who just plays off the final man, the shoulders of the final defender, and just waits for balls to be played in. But at the same time, like, they surely can't do any worse than playing him up front over Modest at this point, because and you could maybe even flip it around and say perhaps Modest is actually better suited as coming off the bench when things aren't working well. If Dortmund are really hemming a team in, you bring on Modest to try and win some crosses or some, you know, some swinging some balls into the box to him as a backup option. But
yeah,
I thought Makuku was very impressive. It was great to see him get that goal. You could see how much it meant to him.
Yeah.
And yeah, hopefully he gets a run of games now.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's getting a new contract. We were asked by his minder, I love using that word, not to ask about his contract situation, but he did speak about his time at Dortmund and how he loves working with Edin Terzic. And then he added, and I'm looking forward to working with Edin Terzic for a long time.
Hmm.
So we didn't even have to ask him. I think that indicates that something is in the works. But I thought he was excellent. You know, he made a difference when he came on. Karim Adeyemi too. He was another one I wanted to point out. I mean, the easy one to point out throughout the entire 90 minutes is Jude Bellingham. He is that team, especially now with Marco Reus being injured, right? Mm. And the Marco Reus injury, I was told it's what they call in German a Bänderriss, which translates to a torn ligament. Somehow Dortmund and people in the Marco Reus camp who I talked to, they think he's going to be fit in 3 to 4 weeks. If they manage that, wow, that's some miracle cure. But they're positive they can, because a bender is a torn ligament. It's not a partial tear, it's a full tear.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who had a full tear in his ankle knows that that takes a little longer than 3 to 4 weeks. But
yeah, I think the only other thing I'd add is I thought Daniel Malin had a very good game as well.
I was trying to get to him. Yes,
oh,
he was excellent.
Sorry, apologies.
But no, you're quite right. Like, he was awesome. He had the biggest chance after the Jude Bellingham chance in the first half. Mm. Tanked his way into the box. I swallowed it really well to save that. And I thought he was excellent too. And I think he would actually work in a system with Moukoko and Adeyemi up front better maybe than with Modeste.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think someone put it really well to me on Twitter that they remind him a bit of a kind of young, almost like an Arjen Robben, but for the left wing, in the sense that he's got that speed and he just has to kind of maybe work on those cutbacks to score more goals, which is obviously something that Arjen Robben was world-class at. So I think Malin's maybe still some way off that. But finally begin to get glimpses of him this season, looking like the player that Dortmund signed last year. And it'll be really interesting to see if he can kind of go from strength to strength and maybe what went wrong in that first season, because I remember writing about it last year and kind of conclusion I came to was that he was actually getting into some decent positions, but Erling Haaland, just his gravitational pull just demanded everything in the box that, you know, Malin just didn't, he just simply wasn't getting enough ball time in the final third. So that's obviously changed this year, and you can see how much he just loves running defenders when he gets the ball where he wants it with space to run into. So,
yeah,
that's very encouraging for Dortmund, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I really liked him. Had a great game. And I think overall, look, it's just a 1-0 victory against Schalke. But that was a difficult game. Schalke made it extremely difficult for them. And they did find a solution in the end to win that game. And I think they can take a lot of momentum from that into the international break, of course, and then afterwards.
It's absolutely huge, that win. I mean, we really can't downplay it. We were talking on last week's pod about how, you know, if they lose that game, people might start getting really, really angsty as to what Terzic's role as club is. And it just goes to show how big a difference a week can be, because I put out a stupid meme last night, basically, you know, I was like, if you haven't been following the Bundesliga at all this season, here's a quick summary of how it currently stands. And it's that meme of the three or four guys fighting in the chip shop, and in the background and in the foreground, there's a guy just casually eating his chips. And I was kind of saying, like, you know, the guy eating his chips, minding his own business, is Union Berlin, and the four guys in the background are Leverkusen, Bayern Munich, RB Leipzig, and Dortmund. And I had a few Dortmund fans respond saying, how dare you? We're not nearly as bad as Leverkusen or RB Leipzig. And they were like, look at the league table. And I didn't really engage in it because, you know, it's Twitter and what's the point? Yeah. But I was like, have these guys forgotten that less than a week ago, you know, there were huge question marks over Terzic. And if he had lost that game against Schalke, Dortmund would be sitting fifth or sixth right now.
Yeah.
You know, so it just goes to show how quickly football can change. And, you know, they've got a game against Cologne after the international break. And if they win that, then, yeah, they might be looking quite strong. And Terzic is looking just fine for now.
Happy days for Dortmund at the moment. Let's talk about the guy who is minding his own business in a chip shop. And that's Union Berlin. wow. I haven't. So, Alte Försterei, I've been in the past. It's my first time I've been at the stadium since they've been in the Bundesliga. And I mean, it's such an amazing atmosphere and an amazing club and outstanding area of the town. And the stadium is going to be huge when it's going to be expanded to 37,500. It's going to be even a bigger place, better place. And what a story overall. And also, this was my first time, so not only experiencing the atmosphere in the Bundesliga, but it was also the first time I experienced Jordan and Geraldo Becker live in action. And first of all, that Jordan kid, he's a dirty, dirty player. And I mean this as a compliment. But boy, this is a dirty, dirty player. He works extremely hard. When he loses the ball, he wins it back. His defensive work as a striker is incredible. It's the most outstanding defensive work I've ever seen of a striker at this level. And as Geraldo Becker is a gem. I mean, I wrote an article today on Transfermarkt. They signed this guy for nothing from Ado Den Haag, for nothing. And he might be one of the most creative, fast attacking forwards in the Bundesliga at the moment.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've kind of wrote my newsletter this week on Union Berlin, so by the time people listen to this podcast, it should be up on the website. So I can only urge people to have a look at that for my thoughts. But I was kind of thinking about this, about these two players who are doing so well in the Bundesliga. And without taking credit away from Union Berlin, what do you think about this idea that these two guys are proving my theory that no team in the Bundesliga actually knows how to defend? And we have a team in Union Berlin who are very well set up, and they just simply have two good strikers who are taking advantage of kind of dizzy defenses every weekend.
Well, that would explain that thread that was put together about Union Berlin's XG. I don't know. I think that a lot of stats like XG are useful, but they don't always give you the full story. In fact, was Fischer said after the game, and these quotes, you know, I was at the game, right, and I collected those quotes, and I think a lot of them made it into your newsletter, so keep your eye out for that, please. But he said that that Jordan and Becker need to get even better in terms of chemistry and to work together, and that Becker needs to get better attacking the second post, something that Jordan does quite well, right? And I'm referring to him as Jordan because I don't know which last name to use. I'm sorry. It's P for Kosibachu. I just say Jordan from now on. That's on what's on the shirt. But he missed two huge chances in the first half, second half, right after restart. So they could have had four, right? And I don't know what the XG was on those, but this is one of those things where XG doesn't always mix with what's happening in real life. I think maybe to address your point, I think what the setup does, it's almost an antidote to how Bundesliga teams defend. Not that the defending is bad, but that the defending is set up in a certain way. And Urs Fischer has looked at it and said, oh yeah, if you're putting a guy in there who works extremely hard and another guy who's very, very fast, and we can mesh that is a way we can really hurt teams. Because of the way the defensive lines press high up. And if you have one guy who gets his hand dirty and presses the defense that's high up, that creates space for another guy who's extremely fast and very good in 1v1 situations. And Fischer has looked at that, and it's drawn it up, and it's working.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I won't really go into too much details into what's in the newsletter because it's obviously designed for, you know, subscribers to read it. But the impression I've got of people at the club and speaking to folk who followed Dirk Fischer's career in Switzerland before he left was that, you know, he's a very down-to-earth, very straightforward, very friendly guy who, you know, is very kind of hands-off in the sense and in terms of he's not like Pep Guardiola or maybe Jurgen Klopp who, you know, demands excellence and really pummels his players full of constant torment with, you know, things to do on and off the pitch constantly. And from what I was told, you know, Marcus Hoffman's assistant manager is kind of the tactician in that team who kind of makes things work, and Fischer's kind of more seen as one person described him to me as almost like a more kind of traditional British manager in the sense that he's kind of the guy who oversees everything. He makes sure the team's kind of philosophy works very well. He makes sure everyone's happy. And he's just a fantastic man manager to the extent that, you know, he even lets the players go out for beers in Berlin, which is quite uncommon these days.
Oh, wow, that's gutsy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, especially with Max Kruse, it used to be in the team. But considering all sorts. But yeah, and he did that in Switzerland as well. He actually was known for going for a few beers himself after games and things. So, you know, it's not maybe the most appealing answer as to why things are working. But I think the most obvious one is that he's just a very good man manager at a club that's doing a good job of replacing players who are sold every summer.
You know what he reminds me a little bit of, or who he reminds me a little bit of, and that kind of ethos reminds me a little bit of, is Ranieri at Leicester.
Okay, yeah.
Interesting. It feels similar. It's also interesting that you're bringing up Marcus Hoffmann because he did mention him in the post-match press conference. For people who don't know, those two like to fly fish together. That's apparently where they draw up a lot of the ideas.
Yeah. But you know what? Fishing is a great way to just kind of let loose and relax. I mean, it's quite similar to why a lot of people go running. It's partly running is a very good technique for if you have writer's block.
Yeah.
Because, well, I guess you'll notice with cycling, I suppose, where if you focus on something very mundane like that, the other parts of your brain can just start twizzling away and working on problems almost subconsciously. So it doesn't surprise me that they kind of come up with a lot of their ideas when they're fishing.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, that's cycling for me. That's where you often get messages in the middle of the night from me because I've just come back from a 3-hour bike ride. And I'm like, we should be doing this on the show.
Yeah, you're often very interested in having a conversation about something just when I'm going to bed, and I have to politely tell you to fuck off.
Anyways,
her wife is like in bed being like, who are you texting? I'm like, it's Manu. She's like, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, I understand the timing isn't always the best, but it's like, I get it. Like, you just have that idea and you just want to get it out before you forget it again, right? So,
oh, absolutely. I completely understand it. Things come to me and I'm like, I'm just going to tell this to whoever's listening right now at this moment in time.
So I guess this is how Union Berlin draw up, like bring it back to that. It's how Union Berlin, it's fly fishing. If you want to know the secret of Union Berlin's success, it's that.
I can't imagine there's a huge amount of spots in Berlin for fly fishing. I think I read somewhere that he sometimes has to go more than 2 hours out of the city to go fishing.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I know they're doing a lot of it in Austria because that's where Hoffmann is from, right?
Yeah. He maybe introduced him to it, if I'm not mistaken. I think they've been a duel since Basel, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. The entire coaching staff has come over from Basel. And I think they worked together before him as well.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. So it's not surprising at all. But yeah, no, it's going very well. I think we'll probably dive more into this in the bonus show because we have had a lot of questions about Union Berlin. But yeah, long may it continue.
Before we wrap it up, we should probably address Max Eberl to Leipzig. That's done. It's officially announced. We were both on holidays today. God save the king and all that.
As members of the Commonwealth.
As members of the Commonwealth. I am in Germany, but my holidays are structured on Canadian holidays, and Justin gave us the day off. So God save the king. Anyhow, Max Eberl got announced today, so that's why you didn't hear very much of it from our Twitter accounts. But we did report that it was pretty much done already on last week's pod. And now the ink is dry on the paper. Gladbach will receive 2.5 million euros from Leipzig to get him out of the contract, which I find that part a little odd because he wasn't paid by Gladbach anymore, right?
I wouldn't be surprised if he was on what we call in the UK gardening leave, which means they didn't actually release him from his contract.
No, that's exactly what happened. Yeah.
So he was still an employee of Gladbach with a contract, but he just wasn't in the job anymore.
Yeah, he didn't get paid. So he was under contract, but he did no longer receive payments because he didn't want to receive payments anymore.
Oh, right. Okay.
But
well,
because of that contract, Gladbach still received a fee. It's odd that. But I mean, on the other hand, you have now Leipzig, who got destroyed on the weekend by Gladbach.
It's a really interesting one, isn't it? Because I'm not quite sure how this is going to work because, you know, obviously Leipzig already have such a regimented, cemented system in place for signing players. So I wonder if rather than bring him in with his experience of scouting or his experience of his experience of, you know, building squads, I wonder if the key reason they brought him in is because he's such a good front of house character. You know, for so long at Gladbach, he was the face of the club. You know, he's very good with the media. He obviously has excellent relations with some of the best journalists in Germany.
Yeah,
very likable guy. I've spoken to myself a few times. Very nice guy. He makes time for people. I remember one time in particular, I spoke to him outside Celtic Park when they played Gladbach in the mix zone. And I was able to chat to him for a long time, actually, when the rest of the journalists were trying to talk to players. I just found him very interesting to talk to. And he's a very nice guy, very open-minded. So he's a very good people person. And I wonder if that's the main appeal for Leipzig to get him in, that obviously the reputation in Germany is basically zero outside of, you know, the club and the city itself. But suddenly if you have someone like him on the TV every weekend before and after games, that him explaining what's going on at the club, it's just a good PR move, I think, more than anything else.
Well, he does know the Bundesliga like no one else as well, right? And he does give some competencies in terms of player signing that Minslav was doing the job. I think whether he did the job good or not is a different debate. I think there's a lot of Leipzig fans out there who would think not. In fact, when there was this rumor that Minslav could go to Chelsea, a lot of Leipzig fans were, please take him. Which I think is a little harsh as well. I mean, these things go, you can rise and fall very quickly in this business. But I do think he knows the Bundesliga quite well. And there's a reason why Uli Hoeneß, for example, for a long time wanted to have Eberl as his replacement at Bayern Munich.
So is he going to be working under Mitzlaff at RB Leipzig, or is he replacing him?
No, they have... they're in the same rank but different positions. They're both on the board. So he's director of sport. So you know how there's a sporting director in German football. There's also you know this, but people might listen, might not. But director of sport is indicate. So if you're a sporting director, then you're not on the board. But if you're a director of sport, you're also sitting in on the sport and on other decisions, right? Which is when Hasan Salihamidžić was promoted from sporting director to director of sport because he's now a board member, which gives him a lot more powers, right? And so Eberl will be a director of sport, which makes him sit in with Minslav and all the other decision makers at RB on a daily basis.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, that's another thing that I think will be quite interesting, because he's obviously used to basically running every aspect of Gladbach, you know, and I think that was obviously maybe something that held him back in terms of maybe getting the Bayern job in the past, that he would be the guy who'd want to be in control of everything at the club. So I'm just intrigued to see how he fits into that Leipzig structure. I'm not really, as I'm sure listeners know, I'm not really dead against the whole Leipzig thing. I understand that why rival fans don't like them, but I'm not exactly the kind of guy who's going to be outside the Red Bull Arena with a placard saying down with RB Leipzig or anything. I'm just more intrigued to see how he fits into that kind of corporate structure.
Yeah.
More than anything else. But yeah, on the face of it, it looks like a smart signing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. It's going to be interesting to see how Marco Rose is going to navigate this all until Eibar takes charge on December 15th. Hmm. I mean, by all indication is that Marco Rose was Eibar's guy, but they need results. It's a results-based business. You know, you need results, and you need to be in the Champions League, and there isn't much time. So I wonder if things don't go well, could Eibar's first act be finding a new head coach? I mean, that'd be quite something.
Yeah, they looked pretty hopeless against Gladbach, but I've been saying for a while now, Gladbach looked good this season.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, once again, another clean sheet. You know, that's what, 3 in a row? Mm. So, you know.
Yeah, don't sleep on them. Don't sleep on Frankfurt either. They won too.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a few. It's chaos. It's what we want. There's actually, you know, we're almost done with the show, and we could probably open up another couple cans of worms to discuss, and we'd be sitting here for another 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Because, there's a ton going on at the moment. The Liga is alive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fantastic. It's been a great, great opening start to Liga. And I'm absolutely gutted that the international break's here now.
Oh, God. But then we get a break, so that's nice.
I get to go on a honeymoon.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, so if you're not subscribing, this is the last time you're hearing Stefan for a good 2 weeks. No, 10 days.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and not me either, because I'm going to take a break as well. So we're not going to have a main show next Monday either. Keep that in mind. Or are we? No, it's international break. We don't have anything to discuss. So, No. We have the prediction box, and we'll probably have something behind the paywall.
Yeah, we'll have the bonus pod and the preview pod next week.
Yeah. All right. Okay, cool. On that note, this show, as always, is brought to you by Bet Online. And please, if you haven't already, take a look at our newsletter. There's tons of content. We had bonus content this weekend too, my match analysis from the Riviera Derby. And we're going to probably do more of those as we start going back to games. So keep your eye on that. It's not a regular thing, so don't expect it. But we do each provide a post as well once a week. And then, of course, a show as well behind the paywall. And then you get this show and the previous show without the ad behind the paywall as well. Anything else you want to add, Stefan?
No, only that I've just noticed that Union Berlin have just retweeted your article about Jordan and Becker. So that's an interesting end to the night.
Oh, wow. That's a nice push. Thank you, Union. They were great hosts on the weekend, so not surprised. That's it from us until Wednesday for subscribers. Otherwise, until next week, auf Wiedersehen.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian, plant queen, and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wall.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way. Like, come on, Amber.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen, also a comedian, and I host people at our home. I have a great wine collection in my cellar.
Well, you mean the mini fridge.
It's a mini fridge.
New episodes of Fly on the Wallin drop every Wednesday. Listen in as we discuss relationships, books, and keeping our sweet baby kid alive while we make laughs on the internet.
Subscribe to Fly on the Wallin wherever you get your podcasts.